Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. Lisa Murphy still missing in action. Still, where was she? Amsterdam last?
Or Amsterdam, and now she's in Brussels.
She's in Brussels. I assume she's going through the Sprout Museum. Enjoying the Brussels Sprout Museum. That's all I know about Brussels. That's where they grow. That's where they grow all the sprouts, right?
Sure.
Crickets. Yeah. That was crickets. With me today is Josie Schneider and Tasha Johnson. Josie is, let's talk about Josie for a while. Josie, you can say hi.
Hi.
I'll pause. Josie's got a lot to talk about. We're going to let Josie talk about in a minute, but let me praise Josie for a minute. Josie has been instrumental in getting the Playvolution HQ website up and running. She helped collect a lot of the original links that we had there, and she's done some original stuff, and now she's pretty much our in-house children's book recommender because she's a librarian lady. Although today she got her hair down. Josie also plays Miss Becky in the new podcast, Miss Becky's Classroom, which people, by the way, this is the first recording that has happened since I think it's been released. People are actually listening to the show. So that's kind of fun and exciting for us. So we hope you keep listening to that. If you haven't checked it out. So Josie is going to be with us to talk about children's literacy because that's her job now. Although if you want to play a drinking game, see how many times I call her Corey because she has her husband's name on the screen here while we're recording on Zoom.
I have no idea how to change that. That's what it's going to be forever.
So where should we start, Josie?
Well, I thought I would just explain a little bit about my role and what I do. I'm a children's librarian. It's technically called an early literacy associate, and that's another soapbox I could go on, but I won't.
What's the difference between a librarian and a children's literacy associate?
Well, you have to be a librarian at certain library systems. You have to have a master's degree in library science, which guess what?
What?
I have one of those.
Oh, so that means you can be a librarian?
I can, but that is not my classification. The library world is a weird place. Spend a day on library Twitter and you'll learn a lot of this, but it's one of those
library Twitter. Okay.
Library Twitter. Oh God, it's fun.
I imagine library Twitter is a bunch of people going, shh.
No, see, that would be a common misconception. Libraries are no longer quiet places.
Well, yeah, that's because they're full. No, I'm not going to go into it.
Yeah, you stop. Okay, so anyway, librarians, I think you see this in teaching too. Professions that tend to be looked down upon, professionalization becomes a big deal. And I think it's a pecking order thing. When people look down on your field in general. If you have more education than others, you want to make sure other people know it. Mm-hmm. And that has kind of happened in the library world where, you know, if you have this master's, well, then suddenly you are a real official librarian, even if you've never done the job. And
well, it's at some level, it's more about credentialing than educating.
Exactly.
And that's kind of a sad place to be. But I mean, it's going on in early learning. If you're,
it's everywhere.
There's a difference between, I mean, center people often look down on family childcare people, and family childcare people look down on center people, and then there's the Head Start people. So, I mean, it's a big peck. Life is fucking high school. So, what are you going to do about it?
But I hate it. But anyway, that doesn't matter. So, I am an early literacy associate, and I do a lot of things with that. I'm in charge of our family story time at the library. We also do play and learns, which is just, we have a bunch of toys and activities set up that families can come in and just interact with their kids for an hour or so. It's kind of nice because I can put up all the messy stuff. You can come do your sensory activities and then you can leave and I clean it up for you.
That sounds delightful. The thing is, libraries have got to reinvent themselves like so many other places do now that we've entered the digital age, right?
Yeah. You can get it. It's almost more of a community center in a lot of ways now than a place to go get information. And don't get me wrong, we still have access to all of the information you could possibly want, but we really view ourselves as a connector to resources versus the resource itself.
Yeah. A former childcare mom from our family childcare days is a library associate at our local library because she does not have a master's. They've been dealing with a lot of this, and their library has basically become a de facto homeless shelter for huge parts of the years too. So part of her job is trying to weed out the urine smell in the library and some of the disgusting things that are going on because the city and state and society in general won't deal with those issues, which is beyond the scope of this podcast. But
totally different podcast.
Yeah, I'm sure those problems don't happen in the Metro Kansas City area though, huh?
We have residential plumbing in our library. So
not industrial, yeah. Huh?
No, we don't.
Maybe need to get a capital campaign going. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, and so it's not the library experience that I probably had back in 1978. Going down to the library and checking out books for myself for the first time when you were probably a toddler. Were you born in 1978?
No, I was born in 87.
Oh, what?
Jeff. No.
Yeah, fuck you, Josie. Get off my podcast. God, that just made me feel a lot older than I thought I was. So a vastly different experience then. So yay for you for doing that job and helping transform the library as we used to know it into something that can move forward into the future.
Well, thanks. I've really, really enjoyed it. But I did want to give you that background because when I talk about early literacy tips in a little bit, what I do at Storytime should look different than what other people do in a classroom setting. Because our job, even though story time is very fun for the kids, they love to come. Mm-hmm. Our job is really to teach parents how to encourage early literacy at home kids can learn those skills at the library time, but it is not necessarily to teach the children themselves. It's to teach the parents how to continue the work at home.
So it's the modeling experience.
It is.
Do the parents know this?
Yes and no. I mean, we do things like we'll stop and kind of like we have an early literacy tip of the week where we'll kind of explain what that looks like in the programming we're doing for that day. But a lot of it is just, we hope it's intuitive that once they come, they watch what we do, then they'll begin to read to their children at home using some of those strategies.
Yeah, modeling some of the stuff that they've seen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess what I'm saying is, at least my personal philosophy is, what you're seeing at story time shouldn't necessarily be happening in a classroom setting, because it's a lot more structured.
Uh-huh.
Story time is going to look more like your traditional circle time.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, well, we all know how we feel about circle time.
Circle, yeah, yeah.
So what's it look like? The kids, I mean, they're scheduled at the library. Families show up.
Yeah, families show up. We have a certain routine that we follow throughout the library system, although we can play around with that. We start out, they come in, we've got toys set up all over the room. They can play for a little bit, and then we'll do some bubbles. And at that time, then we'll do a welcome song, some finger plays. We'll read the story, do some large motor activities, and then they go back to play again. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it looks very much like a circle time.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, and this is my number one tip for everybody, movement is okay. And I can't promise you it's going to look like this at every library story time you go to, but for me, I don't make them, I encourage them when it's time to read to come join us in the meeting area, but I don't care if I still have one-year-olds over playing with toys.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter.
Because they can probably, they're not far enough away that they can't hear you.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes.
And they're probably listening better playing than
yes,
sitting there.
Yes, because they've got that whole sensory experience. I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes that kid across the room playing with blocks is the one who's actually listening to the story the closest.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you know what? Maybe not. Maybe they're just not into it that day, and yeah. that's okay. So that's something I've really tried to help my parents understand, that if their kid's just not feeling it, that's all right.
So do you get the parents that are trying to yank the kids over uh-huh. and make them sit still and all that kind of stuff? And
yeah.
And so what's the language you use with them? Like in the moment, do you try to cut it off and like, hey, that's okay. Or do you just let it go and talk to them afterwards? Or?
I mean, it depends. It's, yeah. You know, I'm not going to be, they're the parent and it's up to them, but I will say, oh, it's fine. I don't mind
uh-huh.
if he's over there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on I'll say, oh, don't worry. And this is usually the parents of the 1 and 2 year olds that come in. You know, it's like, it's okay. It's actually really appropriate for them to want to get up and move around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my tip number one. It's okay for them to move. You can listen to a story and not sit crisscross on the carpet with your hands in your lap.
Yeah, because I mean, the reality is that's not a battle anybody is going to win and walk away happy from.
No.
You might win that battle and get them to sit still, but nobody's going to walk away happy from that, because it's going to be a fight for the child and a fight for you. And the thing is, they're wired. I mean, it's in their DNA at that age to be in motion when they're interested in being in motion. And so fighting it is just a lost battle.
Absolutely. And that kind of leads into my next tip, which is to follow the kid's lead. And you don't have to finish every book you start.
I know.
Sometimes you are going to have a group who is super engaged and they want you to read that book 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes your book just kind of sucks. You didn't do a very good job picking it out, or Mercury is in retrograde or whatever, and they are just not into it that day. And that's okay. You are going to be so much more successful if you just read the room and kind of let the kids lead where it goes.
Along those lines, does that make it okay to skip a page now and then if you need to, or is that unethical?
Oh, that's tip number 3.
I don't even have the list, people.
You don't have the list. You don't have to read every word on the page. You can skip pages, especially with the younger crowd. I mean, the younger your group is, the more likely you are to just kind of paraphrase or read the pictures.
Yeah, unless you got a Maddie in the room. Maddie always, she'd always call me out if I tried to do that. She'd memorize the books. I mean, even when she was tiny, she memorized them real quick. And then I get the eye, the look, the eyes would bug out of her head, and then the eye roll, like Jeff skipping stuff again. Must be nap time. Yeah, so you gotta try to get that kid to stay at home or something.
Well, the nice, unless they really know the story, the nice thing about story time is they're usually not close enough to read the words on the page. So.
So do you recommend that you should read the book first? So if you need to skip a page or, yes, you know, shorten a page down a little bit to have an idea?
I won't say I have never done a cold read because I totally have. But you should generally be familiar with the book before you start to read it.
It is helpful, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, when I think about... Of course, when I'm doing it in story time, I've read the book ahead of time. But I think about when I was in the classroom, you know, you'd have a lot of books out that they can choose. And there's going to be times that, and in fact, in a classroom, most story time should be child initiated.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. And part of Josie's background that we didn't get into is that she worked in the center for a long time and pretty much grew up in that center.
Yeah.
I mean... Since her mom was the director, so Josie's been to a lot of story times. Plus, she's got a daughter who's heard all the books. So other than the current job, Josie's got a lot of background in this. I really like the idea that, you know, a lot of centers schedule the story time. I mean, it ends up being like an after lunch before nap kind of thing, or it gets stuck in the day during circle time or something like that. And that's, I guess, okay. I mean, it's better, I guess, than never reading to the kids.
Of course.
But I was always found it more enjoyable when it was those informal moments where everybody's kind of playing and then somebody comes up and says, Jeff, read this to me. And then we sit down and two or three other people who might be interested see this happening and come and join us and three others listen from the block area and that kind of stuff. It just feels more, I don't know if organic is the right word, but it seems to fit into the flow of the way our program operated, I think, a little bit better than forcing it upon them because it's 12:15.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I don't know if I've ever read a book to just one child. It starts out one child, but you're right. The next thing you know, you sit there, you start reading, and then half the class is in a circle around you wanting to hear the rest of the story. So
yeah,
it is organic. And because it's a book that the child's come over and said, hey, will you read this? You know, it's something that they're interested in. Mm-hmm. I like organic. That's a good word for it.
Yeah, no fertilizer.
No fertilizer.
Or only natural fertilizer.
And you know, there is nothing wrong with reading a story at 12:15 because it's a good way to settle down for nap time.
Oh yeah.
Even then in my classroom, that was the time of day that I would let somebody go pick the book because then it was still something that they wanted to read versus, you know, now I will, I mean, there were times that I had a really great book that I wanted to share, but it was still giving them the initiative to choose what we were going to do during that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
But my next tip kind of goes along with that, and that's, you know, you do decide generally what books are out in your classroom. Mm-hmm. Pick books you like. Because if
you don't like them, oh.
Well, okay. And I say that, I'm assuming I'm talking to people that are going to pick books that are good for the...
Good books.
I'm hoping they're good books. But if you hate a book and you're bored, you're going to sound like it when you're reading it.
Yeah.
And there is no way you're going to be engaging if you sound like this.
Yeah. And I mean, my experience with that is I could read Brown Bear maybe 8 times in a row, but sometime between the 9th and 10th time, it was like, I can't read this anymore. Can we pick a different one? And I think that's also a good thing. You know, read it as much as they want, as long as you are still not bleeding from the ears from hearing yourself read it over and over again. But yeah, I mean, that's Lisa and I worked on a book audit where basically one of the things is, do you have books in your classroom that that you enjoy being around? Because that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I mean, in that way, you're already kind of pre-selecting the books. You know, you're not going to hate anything or anything that they bring you. Mm-hmm. But there were lots, you know, I did not have character books in my classroom.
Your
Paw Patrol books, your Peppa Pig books, whatever the popular thing is.
What about Corduroy? Is Corduroy a character?
And I'm talking about like pop
commercial ones.
Yeah, commercial ones that, you know, the books, they suck. They're not good.
Clifford the Big Red Dog, does he get kicked out?
Clifford is different. And see, Clifford and Pete the Cat has kind of become this, and Splat the Cat and some of those franchises that started off as one really good book, uh-huh. and now they just turn out a new one every month. They're not the best. That said, if I have a child that walks into my classroom and they say, please, please, please read this book, it's story time today, and it is Barbie's Kitty Adventure or something like that. We have something like that at my house. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read that book because it is important to that child, and you are making them feel important when you
Yeah, I agree. It's it's easy to get on your high horse about, I only read children's literature. And the thing is, if they're interested in it and it's a gateway to get them interested in other reading and other books, then you should probably walk through that gateway with them.
Absolutely. And that will go into that other thing I want to talk about later for you, everyone.
Josie has a rant coming up in a future episode.
I do. I'm just looking through. Oh, okay. So just a few more general tips. If you've got a large group for story time, shorter books are generally better than longer books. Now, there are so many good picture books that are very, very wordy. Those are better for a lap sit where you have the child sitting there with you. You can slowly work through the book than if you're trying to keep 15 kids engaged.
Yeah.
So short text, interactive text usually works out best. And to kind of go along with that, this is, you know, I was talking about we're trying to teach parents skills. This is the skill we're really trying to teach them, and that's dialogic reading.
Ooh, that sounds like a fancy word. What's that mean?
It basically just means you're having discussions as you read the book. It is a fancy word, but you're talking about the illustrations, you're making predictions, you know, you're discussing character connections to the child. Cause you know, you read a book about a dog. I have a dog. Okay. Well then maybe you're going to stop and talk about your dog. And does it do the same thing that this dog is doing?
It doesn't become all about plowing through the book.
Yeah. Yeah. You're really slowing down and giving them the chance to process because, you know, in the same way that if you ask a child a question and then immediately expect an answer, they can't do it because they have to stop and think and process. Mm. If you just go page to page as fast as you can, then they don't really have a chance to think about what they're hearing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's those moments where you're reading Goodnight Moon and you got to stop and find that stupid mouse in every one of the illustrations. Yes. Oh, just let's get the book done so we can get on with the day. But you gotta bite your lip and you gotta look for the stupid mouse, even though it's always in the same place. It shouldn't be so hard to find. Oh boy, I just went off on a rant, didn't I? I love that.
Goodnight Gorilla is the same way. I love Goodnight Gorilla, but oh my God, every time my daughter would bring me that book.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and it's those moments, those kids that get into those illustrations so much, it really does become delightful until you do it for the 4,000th time. And then it might get a little bit tedious, but when they first start that process of first starting to be able to pick those things out is awesome. And then you're just ready for it to be done.
It is, but I think along with this, the questions you're asking are not questions you already know the answer to.
Oh, such as?
Yeah. Like, what color is this? What color is this? What does that animal say? Mm-hmm. If that's where you need to start to feel comfortable beginning a conversation while you're reading, that's fine, but that's not really encouraging any higher order thinking.
Yeah, those become exercises in trying to tick things off your developmental checklist. She can identify the color orange. She did it in this book, and it's not real conversation. Is that we don't go around asking people questions that we know the answer to all day long, like we do with kids. We rarely do it with other adults, kids get the feeling that's kind of a phony, I'm being tested kind of thing, even if they can't articulate it.
Now, sometimes those questions are okay when you are wanting them to make a prediction about what you think is going to happen on the next page. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking about Pete the Cat in the White Shoes. Like, Pete stepped in a large pile of strawberries. What color did it turn his shoes? And before you turn the page and it says red, they're all going to shout red. But that's more the actual text of the book versus just trying to quiz them.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always tried to get, you know, like reading Cat in the Hat, I try to get into the existential angst of the cat and the power struggle between good and evil and those kind of things. But most of the kids didn't want to go there.
They didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
Oh man.
That's just me though. What else you got?
You know, I think that was pretty much all of my reading tips.
That's your reading tips. And so those are Josie's reading tips. I'm guessing since Josie is not only an A student, but an A student who wants the extra credit, Josie's going to get those to me in some sort of written format that I can put up on the Playvolution HQ site too as Josie's reading tips, right?
Was that
the plan? I mean, were we going to do that?
It is now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good idea, right? So people can have that there as a handout when they're ready to do story time.
Yep.
I've got a question. Do you do the librarian thing where you hold the book up so they can see the illustrations and you're kind of reading over the side of the book like this? Or do you read the page and then show the illustrations? What's your illustration showing? How do the pros do it?
I usually hold the book up so they can see.
Do you have the book memorized by this point or...
Sometimes yes, but I will say there are times that I don't, especially with those books where the illustration is kind of the joke. It's kind of the twist of the story. Then those times I will read and hide the pictures and they get excited.
Do the big reveal.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What other, I mean, any special kind of shoes you should wear? Should you sit on a kid-sized chair? I'm just trying to get the inside tips.
I mean, depending, usually I sit on the floor with them.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually I sit right. I mean, and that's just what I did in my classroom. That's the way I'm most comfortable. Now, if I have a huge crowd, I will stand up so everybody can see and I'll kind of walk around a little bit. But then, you know, there are days and I'm lazy and I sit in the chair. I don't really.
No, there's no right or wrong way for that.
There's no right or wrong way.
And I mean,
feel comfortable.
What are your feelings about like character voices and that kind of stuff?
Voices are great. Voices are great. My thought on that is if voices make you super uncomfortable, your tone of voice can be enough of a change, you know, as long as you're not reading at monotone. If voices freak you out and make you want to not read certain books, then don't feel like you have to do a voice for every single character.
Yeah.
But if you're comfortable with it, they generally like it.
And I think, I mean, that's the comfort thing, I think, is probably a big piece of it too, because, I mean, if you've got three adults in the classroom, the person who is reading stories at story time should be the person who get some pleasure out of reading stories at story time and not the person who feels like it's a horrible chore, because I mean, it totally radiates to the kids, doesn't it?
Well, exactly. That kind of goes along with that whole read books that you like. And if you're not comfortable reading out loud, well, I won't say you're off the hook to not do it, especially if you're the only person in the room with those kids, because then they're never hearing books read aloud. And that might be on you as the teacher to practice a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Because you do get better at it as you practice it. And so spending some time at home reading to your cat and goldfish, I guess, is probably a good way to get over those hangups. Because the thing is, the kids aren't really judging you that harshly.
They don't care.
It's not like they're taking to Twitter afterwards and, oh man, did you hear the way Miss Monica read that story? Oh my gosh, that was horrible. I mean, that's not happening.
It's the same thing with singing. They don't care if you have a terrible voice. They just want to hear music.
Yeah, they're happy somebody's paying attention to them. They're not standing behind the playhouse on the playground later in the day ripping you apart. They're just happy you read them a story. I mean, really.
Exactly.
So anything else before we wrap this one up?
No, I can't think of anything else.
Well, I appreciate the list, Josie. That's our storytelling tips from Josie. I will get this up on the Playvolution HQ site too, because I think they're all good tips and they're all real useful. And I think we maybe just kind of take for granted that people just automatically know this stuff when in fact it's sometimes, I mean, I've had new people come into a room who've never read to children before. And then that's part of their job, and you can't be good at it until you do it. And so this is some good stuff that's going to help people get better at this piece of the job that a lot of us end up being responsible for.
And if anybody has any questions, Jeff can give them my email and I'd be happy to.
Or you can give them the Instagram. What's the Instagram?
What is my Instagram? I don't know.
It's Josie and Juliet Reed or something isn't it?
Yeah, there you go. It's at Juliet and Josie Reed.
Yeah, at Juliet and Josie Reed on Instagram if you want to get a little bit more Josie in the day. And, okay, so some other resources. If you go to playvolutionhq.com/books, you'll find a collection of, one, adult recommended books, like early learning books for like adults about the profession of early learning. But we've also got the collection of recommended kids books. Josie has put together most of that list. I've added some things on there as well. And we've pretty much got a new one scheduled to pop up there every week into 2020 as we record this episode. And so right now I think there's 50 to 100 books that are already there and more to come. And it's just good books, because you should be reading good books to kids. And if you don't have a radar for that, this is a good place to start out with some tips. So that may be a link you want to check out.
There is, I don't know if you have this book on there, but there's a really great book for parents and caregivers called The Read Aloud Handbook. And I'm looking up who the author is because I don't remember.
Well, Josie's doing that. Before we wrap up, I'm going to do one other thing. We have recently set up a Patreon page for Playvolution HQ to try to make it a little bit easier for us to connect with people who are supporting the project. For a couple years, we had people kicking in a buck or two now and then via PayPal, and I found out it was just hard for me to connect with those people, and Patreon is a better platform for that. And so that's just kicked off recently. One of the levels we have is a podcast level. So at the $3 a month level, you kick in at that level, it helps support the podcasts and the website, and you can get all the Upstairs Studio podcasts, pretty much all of them early, like a week early. And so there's a special feed set up just for patrons, and you get, I mean, there are people that are listening to the new Miss Becky podcast. Episode 2 just came out as we're recording this, but there are a couple of patrons who've already listened to episode 3. So it's kind of a fun thing we're trying out. Did you find what you're looking for?
I did. It's called The Read Aloud Handbook, and it's by Jim Trelease, and he really writes it for parents. So it's very accessible. He updates it every few years to keep the book titles current, and it is just this huge collection of great read aloud books and then some tips that he has as well. And I mean, it's for little kids, but it's also for older kids, because you can keep reading aloud to your child until they are in high school.
Oh man, I remember like fifth grade, I think even into high school, we had one teacher that she would read to us every once in a while. And it's a human experience to listen to other people share stories, and it's kind of fulfilling and joyful.
Yeah. And if you don't feel comfortable reading aloud, I'm thinking to your older children, audiobooks are great too.
Yeah.
Throw on an audiobook.
Yeah.
You'll get the voices, you'll get everything.
Absolutely. Well, hey people, this has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We will be back soon with another episode. If you're out on the interwebs and you spot Lisa Murphy, I'm sure she's wandering around with a Where's Waldo costume. Tag her and tell her you miss her. She'll be back soon. I don't think she's completely ghosted me. That would be horrible if she moved to Europe just to not do the podcast anymore. I don't think that's the case, but
I don't know.
I'm a little bit worried. Thank you, Josie. Thank you, Tasha. Back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And clear. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.